Welcome, everyone. This is Beer Guys Radio. We are happy to be here, and we're happy to have you with us. It's a good day. We're warming up, y'all, here in Atlanta some. And the unfortunate thing about that is we have a show next weekend with our friends at Truck and Tap that is hot drinks for cold weather. And if it's 60 degrees out, we're going to seem like fools. But it won't stop us. We'll go through with it. We'll do our best. But again, this is Beer Guys Radio. I am Tim Dennis. I'm here with my good friend, co-host Brian Hewitt. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing well. And we should have Truck and Tap turn down the thermostat a lot. So it's really cold inside.
Yeah. We'll do our best, y'all. Absolutely. And Nate is on another assignment tonight, we'll say. But we have the wonderful Becky Smalls with us. Smalls,
hello. How's it going? Good. Pleasure to be here.
To see you. Yeah. Smalls makes occasional appearances. So if you're here on a night that Smalls is with us, it's an extra special treat to have her with us here. So with that said, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to have a good time. Plenty to talk about this week. And Brian, I shared some news with you earlier this week. For those that don't follow us on Instagram, and really you're following Brian. Brian handles our, Twitter.
Twitter.
Yes. X. Yeah. For those that don't follow us out there, Brian handles our Twitter account. You know, he shares beers, he shares news stories and that. Fridays, he's got different themes throughout the week, his drinking themes. And Fridays are long beer Fridays where he likes to enjoy stovepipes, 19.2 ounce cans. And Brian, I believe we're seeing more and more beers that are going into those stovepipe cans, right?
Yeah, I'm seeing new announcements all the time, and this one merits particular interest and mention from me as a shout out. North Coast is getting into the stovepipe game. These are the first stovepipes they've ever done, and they're releasing Scrimshaw Pils and Old Rasputin in these stovepipe cans. Those are their two most popular beers, and we get both of those here, so I'm very excited. 10 years ago, I would never have imagined drinking Old Rasputin out of a 19.2 ounce can. And now I can't imagine anything else. I'm so excited about this. ISO, Tim. ISO.
I don't know if a 19.2 ounce can of Old Raspy is a solid idea. And because I know you, Brian, and you're definitely going to drink the whole thing.
Yes, so I am.
This isn't going to be shared amongst your friends. That's not a single serving there.
I've got a glass that's large enough to hold, and I bought it for this reason, to hold an entire stovepipe. Nice snifter, like very dainty sized. It's quite nice.
Okay.
All of it goes in there, and all of it goes then into my mouth at some point in time.
I wonder how many glassmakers are catering to that with the popularity of those cans. If there's, I guess like a 20 ounce pint, what's it? Imperial pint is 19.2, isn't it?
I think so. In that range. Yeah, that's around... Yeah. The Imperial pint size. And as a guy who's done the search on Amazon looking for glassware that larger and larger, I know that people have put out glasses for entire bottles of wine, and I was looking for something like that for beer, and there aren't that many options. It kind of drops it about 17 ounces, so finding anything above it, and I think that the one I ordered is technically not as large as they said it was. Or they use some sort of funny math to come up with whatever they have, because it was supposed to be larger than another glass I have, and I'm pretty sure it's the same.
It's not.
It's just a slightly different shape. So, yeah.
Smalls, with all these can sizes out there, what do you think of these stovepipes? What's your preferred package size?
So that's what I was about to comment, was that it seems like we're going full circle again, where we went from having these big bombers that we would share, take the bottle shares, and then all of a sudden, no, we're going to go down to the smaller cans, the 16, the 12 ounces. And now we're like, nope, we're taking it back up, but we're going to do it in a can because you can do better recycling with that. That's my theory.
I hope we end up with 750 cans. I hope
that's what I was just thinking. Will that happen?
So
that'd be amazing. Yeah,
a magnum can. Brian can't even handle it. We're gonna lose Brian.
I definitely need to have two hands to hold that.
That
would be amazing. Yep. Well, they do have I think it's their 22 ounce cans that what's the Australian one? I think the oil can ones that they've been around for Foster's.
Foster's, yeah.
I think that they have 22 ounce cans, and I think there's somebody else that does those. And I've had some of those. The problem with them is they're short and squat. I want longer ones because that's part of the theme.
Are those quarts?
Yeah.
Are they 32 ounce? Or was the Foster small, less than a quart? I mean, it looks comparable to a jar of mayonnaise, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's I want to say it was like something weird, like
22 something.
Maybe 24. Like, the bomber, no, I think it was 24 ounce. Yeah, was it? I think it was 24.
Okay, gotcha.
So we got rid of the bomber. We basically are coming back to the bomber in it, like Small said, in cans, which I don't hate this idea. I don't hate it at all, but okay. I do kind of miss the bombers. I like them. Mm-hmm. And somebody on social media was saying, bring back the $20 bomber. I'm like, no, bring back the $10 bomber that we used to see when they were hot. And we, I think in some cases you could actually get a better deal buying the 22 ounce bottle than you could any other format. I don't know. I never did the math. I always just saw the bombers because that was the way to go.
I am still on board for the 8 ounce cans. I really think that's where we need to go because I like to drink different beers and I don't necessarily want 12 or 16 or 19.2 ounces. Give me an 8 ounce pour. I can have that. So I can have a few without overindulging. And if you're someone that does like a full pint, two cans, man. And you're right there. And
that's true. Yeah.
Do eights and do the 19.2s. And then
nothing in the middle.
Yeah. And everybody, you know, 12s and 16s can go away. You know, we've got that covered there.
Does it become a logic puzzle when you're trying to figure out how to pour the right amount for several people? Like a little
it
bit
does,
of beer.
Yeah.
And you pour it into a third glass and you pour it into the second glass and you pour.
Yeah. Well, Brian, that opens up business opportunities for apps that do those calculations for you, where you put it in and you're like, you know, I've got five cans of Lower to Boom and I've got 10 people and I want to make sure everybody gets this much and it'll tell you exactly what to do. And you could even have like glassware manufacturers that advertise in your app. And so, yeah, I really think that the industry needs to push for that. So eights and 19.2s.
All right. You know, and yeah. I don't hate the eights. I would buy a ton of Black Tuesday 8 ounce cans just because.
Yeah.
Well, I probably could drink that and not, you know, nearly die. So that would be
cool. Right.
Yeah.
We got Chad from Terrapin chimed in. And he said, of course I joined and you guys are talking about Foster's.
Of course.
Yeah. And Smalls, I don't think you're on the Instagram feed, but Billy says, hi, Smalls.
Hello. So
he's happy to have you here with us this time. So, yeah, absolutely. We cover all topics here, man. Foster's and can sizes, apparently. Those are two hot topics this week.
And that's exactly.
I used to think that the Foster's was super cool. Like that big can of beer. And even further than that, Sapporo, who's a dirty word now, but they had, I think it was a 2 liter can that had it was a 2 liter aluminum can that had a handle that clipped on the side.
So, yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. So that was it. And you know what, Brian? That would be the perfect size if you're going to an NFL football game because we're looking around and I believe Vine Pair showed us this week based on a bunch of different stats who the drunkest fans in the NFL are. And if some people want to break their records, I think 2 liter cans would be a great way to do that.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe that's what they're drinking. That I don't know what's I haven't been to a stadium in a while. That it's possible that the 2 liter cans are the thing. I'm pretty sure I've seen 19.2 ounce cans at various venues, definitely 16 ounce cans. I saw a video where a fellow was talking about basically 12 ounce cans. Nobody wants those at a sporting venue. They want the 16 ounce or larger because they're paying a lot of money. They want to get a lot of beer.
And you don't have to keep getting up.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, though the NFL's drunkest fans this season, according to Vine Pair, these figures are based on 28,000 positive BAC tests from September 2023 to January 2024 from the users of the BAC Track app. They found that fans, and this may be no surprise to anybody, but they found that fans drank less on game days when their teams did well, and conversely, they drank more when their teams did not perform well.
The math checks out, Brian.
Yes, I think it does. I don't know if you... Do you guys want to guess who the drunkest fans were? Did you guys already look at the list? If you have, I'll just go into it.
I mean, I looked at it, but I don't recall. But I feel like it's somebody in the New England area. I was going to say it's at the top.
So I looked at the list. Unfortunately, my short-term memory is Smalls. That's a good guess. Yeah, the Packers is a good guess. I would have thought maybe New Orleans would have been a good market for that. Well, Vegas doesn't have an NFL team, so that's not. But I imagine they're pretty drunk there, with or without football.
Yeah.
So, I think I think I'd vote for New Orleans.
I think I see a call out to the Cleveland Browns on Instagram, but unfortunately, everybody's wrong-ish, but Tim is close to being right-ish. So the number one is the Tennessee Titans. Their average BAC check-ins apparently were 0.093, so very solidly drunk. In number two spot, Pittsburgh Steelers, 0.088, also over the legal limit. Indianapolis Colts were in third place, 0.086. The Atlanta Falcons made number four. We're number
rise
four.
Up.
I know, after
rise
we lost up. That football, you know, the Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yes, yes. I think we've never stopped drinking, actually, after that.
No.
0.085 for us. We were also hammered. And the New Orleans Saints in the fifth spot, they are technically right there. I believe that's the legal limit. 0.080. So just right
okay.
there.
Right
they
there.
Would they'd still get hauled to jail, but, you know, they're not as egregious as some
right
of the
to
other
jail.
People. So the biggest teetotalers, no surprise, perhaps, based on what I've told you, the Kansas City Chiefs, 0.051. And they're heading towards the confrontation with the San Francisco 49ers. They're at 0.070. So apparently they've had some rough games. And so their fans got a little hammered. But it is worth noting that this is based upon people who bother to download and use that particular app. And I've been to games where I've seen people who definitely couldn't handle using an app after the drinking they did at the
yeah.
game. So you have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt.
So I did think about here's my analysis of that, Brian, because I thought about it. I'm like, well, yeah, but this is kind of a controlled audience because it's people that use this app and this and that.
Sure.
So first of all, at least it's equal across all teams, all locations, because it's the same sample group all across there. So the second thing is you have to assume someone using a BAC app is someone who likes to drink. So we're getting the best of the best as far as drinkers go.
That's true. Yes.
So
the professionals, the people
right.
who take it seriously. Yes.
And the people who could not use it are the ones that are just over the top and would skew the results anyhow. So I think we've got a good sample group to see who's drinking here. So that
okay.
was my end result on that. Absolutely.
Definitely yeah, so skews technologically savvy. So for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So Keith chimed in on the can debate discussion here. He said he's a fan of the 19.2 ounce cans, and he said he usually finds some decent IPAs in that format, even at the gas station. Brian,
yeah.
I think you'd notice that even at your local convenience store, you can get a decent beer or two in those long boys, right?
I think that their big play is the convenience store, anything convenience store. So the best place to get your 19.2 ounce cans is probably a convenience store, which is crazy. Though I have seen a few places around that are have caught on to the popularity, and they will stock a variety of them. So
okay.
There is a beer store that does do that. I like to see that because I like the option. But yeah, this is a convenience store play, honestly. It's really about people on the go that want to grab a large amount of beer in one convenient can and just go. And they, based on what I've read previously, it's usually consumed. They want it out of the fridge, and it's consumed within an hour typically. So
just go. Yeah. Go. So to show that I'm not a huge NFL fan, I'm told on Instagram that Vegas has the Raiders now.
I thought they had okay. gotten a team, but I wasn't 100% sure because I don't really follow. So that'd be
yeah.
terrible for me.
I
turn
no
and be
idea.
Like, no.
And to answer the question, am I close to right or slightly wrong? It's always more right than wrong, no matter what I say. That is
shades of gray.
So,
shades
yes.
of gray.
Yes, absolutely. So, but now it's been a while since I've been to a football game, but it's always a good call to have some beers. And I got to be honest, man, you get there and you're partying and it's hot. Even the macros that the beer guy comes around with can be refreshing. You know, they're kept on,
yep.
they're kept ice cold there. Mm-hmm. We went to a concert, Brian, years ago, Foreigner. When actually we all went to that one. That's
that's
we interviewed them for you know, for a special in the show because they're craft beer fans. A few of the guys there, and I believe it was 173 degrees the day we went to the concert. If I remember,
it was hot. It was
if
gross.
I remember correctly, and they really didn't have a lot of drinks there, but they had. I think they were the 19.2s of Yingling, and
yeah.
we crushed them, man. They were, when you're about to die of heat exhaustion, an ice cold Yingling is pretty darn good. So, yeah, you know,
it's like a life preserver. It's just thrown out to us.
It is.
In that, it is. That sweltering heat.
Gosh, it was something. Real good concert. Good. It was Foreigner, Cheap Trick. And I forget the name of the third group. Oh, it's the
Bonham Experience.
Yeah, like, the Zeppelin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jason Bonham? Is that experience? It? I'll get corrected on the Instagram if I'm not right.
Probably.
So we'll be fine. But, you know, just in general, Brian, not just football games, but the states that drank the most. Vine Pair gave us some info on that. So what are we seeing there? What states like to get their drink on the most?
Yeah. So Vine Pair loves to do these every year, and I love reading them. And they split it up by gallons of ethanol per capita and then total gallons overall. So by per capita numbers, New Hampshire is the number one with 1.87 gallons per capita. Montana is number two with 1.67. Vermont is 1.59 gallons per capita. So it's very heavy northeast with a little mixture of Montana in there. The lowest, which may not surprise people, is 0.524 Utah. Now, here's the thing. There's a note with New Hampshire. They have very low alcohol taxes, and they have no sales tax at all, apparently, which is crazy. That attracts drinkers from neighboring states, which really boosts their number. So they may not be as high up there if they had the same kind of taxes as other states do. But there you go. Now, when it comes to total overall gallons, this is kind of predictable. Just California, 795.2 million gallons is sold there. Texas, it's huge, 655 million gallons. Florida, also very large, a lot of breweries, a lot of people drinking, 443.2 million gallons. The lowest is not Utah, and I spoiled it. It's Wyoming with 13.1 million gallons that they consumed. So
interesting.
Yeah,
a lot of drinking.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. And I would have not picked Wyoming as being on the lowest side, but now that I think about it, yeah.
Really? They're less than Utah? That's well no, I kind of get it because Orion keeps trying to talk me into moving to Wyoming because he says nobody really lives there, so we should go there. And I guess now that makes sense. But still. Yeah.
I think it's the lack of breweries, lack of people, you know. I think it's just sparse population is what it boils down to. So yeah, the total overall is kind of not as informative. I think the per capita gallons is the more interesting feature, but it does. I am kind of surprised to not see New York anywhere in the like the top three for that.
For either one there, huh?
Yeah. So I think that they're surprisingly lower down in the numbers, actually. So I guess I guess they don't drink as much, which surprises me.
Interesting stuff. 13.1 million, man. That seems like such a small number there, you know, with that. But I guess if you don't have a lot of people out there, that's it. You know, Smalls, and the people I know that live in Wyoming, or I know some people that really want to go there, they say it's gorgeous. And like you said, it's not crowded like some other places. So I guess if that's your thing, then
I mean, it's not mine. That's his.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So put your foot down. Orion, you need to listen to this podcast and know that Smalls does not want to move to Wyoming. So move on, Orion. Move yes,
pick,
on.
Pick a different place else. You want to go.
Yeah. Somewhere else. San Diego's nice. You guys should consider that, though.
It is nice. I saw somebody chimed in on Instagram saying that there are also 19.2 ounce cans coming from Umagang, and I think it's a Belgian triple. And so that's exciting too. I do like what they put out. So and it's the very heavily gnome theme. So they're very cartoonish. It's kind of like very I look gnome-y. At those and they remind me of like Sunday comics when I was a kid, the colors and all the characters on them. So yeah, I don't know whatever that means, but I think it's
supposed to be more like vintage church stained glassy kind of stuff, isn't it? Than Sunday comics. Am I mistaken for Umagang? Like,
don't they have a lot of gnomes crawling all over them, like cartoon gnomes? It just reminds me of something I used to see as a kid. So maybe, I don't know.
Well, with the gnomes, I don't know the exact importance, but I know so a lot of European brands seem to use that, especially, you know, some older ones in that. We'll have to Google it. Maybe I'll ask Bard what the significance of gnomes in brewing or history. Maybe that could be a fun show, diving into beer symbology and imagery and all that.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
And see what goes on.
The goats. There's a whole thing, with goats for a different.
Yeah. Box and their goats. Yeah, interesting. Interesting stuff. Well, y'all, we're going to get into our beers of the week right now. We have got from Stillwater, Extra Dry, which is a sake-style Saison Ale. Little beer guy / mostly harmless brewing history. For those that don't know mostly harmless brewing, that was Brian, I'm not sure what term I should use there, but Brian, that's what Brian and I called our home brewing that we did, was mostly harmless brewing. But Stillwater Saison was a very inspirational Saison to our Synesthesia Saison, which is one we brewed a lot and we won quite a few medals for. We really did well and enjoyed that beer. So you look like you were going to say something about that there beer, Brian.
Oh, it's good. It's really good. It's a sake style saison, and it's very dry, as the name implies, extra dry. But it's the Stillwater beer that inspired us, I believe, was Cellar Door. I don't think that was. I don't think it's available anymore. But that was such a great saison. But anyway,
So did that extra dry? Was that reminiscent of sake?
Some.
If you weren't told that it was a sake style saison, would you have thought sake when you drank?
I don't think so. I don't know that I would have gone to sake right away. But when I had sake in my mind, I'm like, I kind of get it. It was really good. It had some nice funky farmhousey notes to it that I really enjoyed. It was nice and dry. It was quite good. I would drink it again if I came across it.
Good, good. All right. From Sierra Nevada, we got a Dank Little Thing IPA on tap there. From Iron Hill, their Winter Warmer, which is a winter ale with cinnamon, nutmeg, and star anise. So that sounds tasty. We've also got from Northern Monk Smalls. This is one I think you picked this up on a trip to the UK, right? Rocket Lolly, which is British for popsicle.
Popsicle. Yeah, that's what they call popsicles or a lolly. Yeah. So if you fly back from London, you'll get a lolly on the plane. So they give you popsicles. Like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm just sitting here and playing my little lolly, and then you have your tea time. But yeah, I picked this up because that was like the big thing, was everybody was doing these rocket pop things, but the this was pop. Their version of it.
Okay. How is it?
It's interesting. It's good. It's not because it's an IPA, which I thought was gonna be really weird with having the strawberry and the orange and pineapple. But I'm like, oh no, they're just kind of doing their own take with it. So it's not like overpowering. It's just, you know, like a typical, like kind of like fruited IPA.
Okay. All right. And you also have from 49th State Brewing, Alaska 8-star lager with cranberry. Are you just showing off your travels on the show?
I'm cleaning out my beer fridge. Yeah. That's all my stuff is from travels. Like, my liquor cabinet's even worse. Like, I'm pulling stuff out. I'm like, where's this from? And Orion's like, you don't recall what trip? I was like, I don't know. I brought so much. I was doing so much international travel last year. I don't remember where half this stuff is from.
How fun, Smalls. Rocket Lolly IPA.
Rocket Lolly. Yes.
Good stuff. Well, I have, I'm sipping right now a new one. Shout out to Anderson Valley. They sent us a 6-pack of this to sample, but it's a new one from them called Blacklight, which is a light dark ale. If you're on the live stream, there's the can for it. Kind of cool. The bear with antlers, typical Anderson Valley. 95 calories in this one, 3.8% ABV, and it is brewed with chocolate malt, midnight wheat, and black rice. This is tasty, y'all. So if you dig black lagers, I would say this is similar to that, but maybe not quite as crisp as you get with a lager beer. It is definitely thinner than what you would think from like a black IPA or something. You know, your typical black lagers have a little more mouthfeel and body to them. This one is definitely lighter there. So it's kind of in between, you know, what I'd say like a light beer, light ale, and a black lager. But if you're looking for something lighter with lower calories, a little more flavor in it, lower ABV, it's pretty tasty. So it is not rated well on Untappd. And I feel that a lot of people going after this kind of beer, if it's not a style you're going for, like it's just the masses getting this, I don't think that maybe people are ready for the style of what it's supposed. I think people may have different expectations of what it should be, is kind of my thinking. But
I want to say that if your main criticism of a beer that has light in the name is that it's not thick enough or doesn't have enough mouthfeel, I think you don't get the concept. I think it's on you. That's not on the beer. That's what I'm thinking. So
right. And I should throw out that I'm not just critiquing people just because of the rating that I saw, but there were comments to that effect that's, you know, it's like, well, it, you know, it doesn't have the mouthfeel and thickness of a real dark, you know. Like, what are you even talking about, man? What are you even talking about here? But yeah, it's super light, of course, you know, 95 calories, 3.8%, but you do have the flavor there from the dark stuff going on. So if it's your thing, it's tasty.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's it, man. I've just got the one beer. So you guys are partying harder than me, and I'm about done with this. So I should have grabbed another, but Brian, moving right along. Another story we followed a lot, but we have another update on Anchor Brewing.
Yeah, we've got one more this week, and I just saw it the day before we were recording. Anchor Brewing union members have announced they will not be putting in a bid on the brewery because they have seen the competing bid amounts, and I think that they can't match them. But they're not completely giving up, though. The group is trying to create relationships with other bidders to discuss how their experience in running the brewery may be of value to those bidders. And I think they're hoping to enter into some sort of a co-op situation with the people who eventually do win or get hired over or something like that. So people who invested in the WeFunder campaign that the Anchor Brewing Union put together, they will be getting their money back, as the invested funds will no longer be needed unless the union is somehow able to enter into a co-op arrangement with the winning bidder, and then they do need the funds at that point. So we still don't know who the any of the bidders are on Anchor, to be honest, not the winning, but just any of them. And we have no idea how much the bids are at this point. And the union is not telling, because they probably can't legally do so, but it must be significant, because I think that there was a lot of support for the union taking this over, and they're not even trying. So, you know, that says something.
So, Brian, this is probably semantics and splitting hairs and all of that good stuff there. But you said people would get their money back unless they need it. And I will say that the verbiage I saw was worded more towards, we're going to keep your money unless we don't need it.
Oh.
And so that was basically like they were going to hold on to the WeFunder funds until they saw what was going to happen. Then it would be refunded if they decided, you know, that it wasn't needed. They did say, though, that if you want to request a refund right now, you can do that. If you decide you don't want to support what the direction they're going there, that you can do that. But I think it's a small distinction, but I think the wording of we're going to keep it unless we don't need it is slightly different than we're going to give it back unless we decide.
Yeah. Cause I was going to say, I was like, well, that's really nice of them to hand it back. But if it's the other wording, then it's like, oh, maybe not. Yeah. Like, okay, let's see.
Yeah. And again, if people see what they're going to do, if they do something where the funds are needed and they say, hey, we've reached this kind of agreement, we're going to need these funds to move forward with this, and someone who's given doesn't like whatever that happens to be, they can get their money back. So it's not like really, I guess it works out. If it's not something you want to be involved with, you don't have to leave your money.
I read different intent into it, but I can definitely see your point of view on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a long shot. And I suspect at this point, everybody's going to end up with their money back, but I have no idea what kind of arrangements they're getting into. And who knows, maybe some sort of a partnership will be formed between this union. There would be a co-op situation. And if that does happen, I think that's a little bit kind of like what people were investing in. Those people would get back into the brewery and start producing the beers that they know and love, potentially roughly the same as the way they had. So that's not the worst outcome possible. And if you invested money in this, I think it's because you want to see the brewery return. So,
right. Yeah. I'm very curious to see how it comes back. And I just hope that whoever happens to win the bid to get it, I'm hoping whoever wins the bid to get it does it right, man. You know, that we're talking a classic American brewery here. Definitely, you know, one of the very early craft breweries in America. And, you know, I'd love to see it pull a Lazarus, as we've said, you know, and not a common move for a brewery to pull, but there's a lot of passion behind this, and I think it's going to happen. I'm just curious to see exactly, you know, what form that takes.
I mean, there is the possibility, and I have to mention it again, that they are selling the actual property and all the intellectual property separately. It's possible that that facility becomes some tech startup, and the actual intellectual property winds up going, maybe they'll get all the brewing equipment. I don't know. Maybe they could work that out between the bidders. But I wouldn't be surprised if what happens is Anchor Brewing stuff starts getting made by some other brewery. And will they be able to do the same thing? I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know.
I think that's a huge loss for San Franciscans if it doesn't stay in San Francisco. Would love to see the brand still around, able to pick up a steam beer every now and then when I want. Always looking forward to Christmas ale. But I got to admit that if I was out in San Francisco and they didn't rebuild there, that would stink. You know, even if they stayed alive, it would stink not to have them there anymore. So,
and one of the big investors is getting a lot of press and presumably has put in money on it, is a local guy from there who's got all of his tech buddies together to, you know, put money behind it. And I think is trying to buy everything outright. So that's possible. It still could happen. I'm just letting people know that it might not. And the more likely thing is they get sold out separately and somebody else is making Anchor beers.
So. We need to get Elon Musk to get in there and get involved with it, because so far
I was going to say we should get an eccentric billionaire to go in there, and then I immediately thought of him and I was like, oh no, never mind.
Bad idea.
Now we saw the beers that came out of the, I think it was the German Giga beer factory thing, and people were posted online with it when they opened the beers that the caps were rusty. So it's like,
The
beers that people paid really good money for and really swanky bottles have probably been sitting around for a while and they were just kind of nasty. So I don't know if that's who we want for this. I'm not sure.
And I didn't hear any positive reviews of the beer itself, you know, despite the caps and that. I think the people that tried it and actually reviewed the beer itself said it just wasn't anything impressive there. So that was marketing hype. Grift.
Oh, yeah.
I think they call it. So there. Well, Brian, I want to give some love to our sponsors right now. As always, Terrapin Brewery Atlanta. We were chatting with Chad on Instagram. That is one of the brewers there at Terrapin Brewery Atlanta. Good friend, making great beers there. Passionate, Brian. They are passionate about beer, and they really care that what they put on tap is something that you're going to love when you come into the tap room there. They do a great job of keeping nice things rotated around, so there's something new and fresh and exciting on there. But they also keep the classic Terrapins on there. You know what? You want a Luau Crunkles, Brian? Bam. I'm sure it's going to be on there. It's been every time I've gone there. You know, so if you want good old Los Bravos,
yes,
there's a darn good chance, especially at Truist Park, that's going to be on. So go down there, see what's new on tap, or grab one of your old favorites. Get you some barbecue from the Fox Brothers restaurant there. Have a good time. Chill out. You know, with this weather being crazy the way it is here, I bet the doors are up and the patio's open there. So you can go have a really good time, enjoy the weather while it lasts there. I've seen that they call this false spring, you know, like there's not really four seasons. There's actually like 12, and it's like, you know, fall, spring, second winter, da da da. So then we have pollen season, you know, the summer of death, things like that. But enjoy the fall, spring while you can. Go out, hit a patio, have a good time. And thanks, as always, to our friends at Terrapin Brewery Atlanta.
And I think it's time for us to take a little tour of what you could be drinking right now at your local truck and tap. In recent weeks, I've focused on, you know, big warming beers, but this time I'm just looking for the most intriguing thing on any of the tap lists. At the Woodstock location, it's easy. I would quickly choose Jester King's Black Metal. It's a farmhouse imperial stout that's fermented with, predictably enough, farmhouse yeast. And I've had it before. It's a very intriguing beer, and I would love to have it again. It's been a while. So at Truck and Tap in Duluth, I'm going to go with a beer I haven't had in ages, and it might surprise some people, Sam Adams Cherry Weeds, in part because I didn't even realize they still made that beer, but also in part because there's room in this enlarged heart for even a wheat beer. And we may have to end the recording here because I'm incredibly tempted to get in the car right now and head to Truck and Tap in Alpharetta for a pour of Parrish Brewing's Ghost Prime IPA. Yes, it's on tap there. It's one of their many recent, very hyped hazy IPA releases, and they generally deliver on that hype. And finally, at the Lawrenceville location, my pick is Allagash's dark strong ale aged on blackberries. Allagash makes great beer. You can't go wrong with a quad, and especially when fruit's involved. So, but as a reminder, when it goes back from fall spring into second winter or whatever winter we're on, we're 1 week away from the hot drinks and cold weather show at Truck and Tap Duluth. So you need to jot that down, you know, grab your Sharpie, write it on your arm so you don't forget it, and join us there next weekend. And as always, thank you to Truck and Tap for your support.
Yeah. If you don't have a Sharpie, we will also accept permanent tattoos on your body.
Yes.
Reminding you of the beer guys. We're not responsible for any liability for any tattoos, but we'll think you're pretty cool. We'll buy your first round if you come in with a beer guys tattoo.
Practice safe tattooing.
Yeah, at some limits on that first round. You know, we don't want you getting like the big, you know, imperial stout, like the expensive beer or something. But we can do a
pilsner. We look like we're made of money,
right?
Money grow on trees
or something. We can work this out. We'll make it work out some way or the other. Absolutely. Well, Brian, an unfortunate bit of news here. You know, in our Discord chat, we've got a few of our brewer friends in there. We chat about all different topics: tin fish, pinball, even beer. Brian, we talk about a little bit of everything there. And, you know, our brewer friends, they're concerned right now. It's very tough out there. And we see different breweries closing every week. Someone else is closing. We're fighting, as we mentioned recently, we're fighting in Georgia to change the laws here to try and help out any way we can to keep these breweries open. But again, when a big brewery falls, it always sends ripples throughout the community, because it's like, well, even if these guys are even being hit, you know, what's that mean for me? And with all that rambling, Brian, we saw that New Belgium actually closed one of their tap rooms this week.
Yes, it's crazy. New Belgium, they're killing it with especially their stovepipe beers right now. But after less than 3 years in operation, New Belgium is closing, or has closed. It's closed now. Their San Francisco tap room and restaurant. The 6,300 square foot facility opened in April of 2021. On the waterfront, within walking distance to Oracle Park, where the San Francisco Giants play. Apparently, it's been losing money in recent years, and the likely reason for that is that downtown San Francisco visitor numbers are still only at like 67% of pre-pandemic levels. And so being walkable to a lot of attractions, and they really were, is great. But you got to have people to walk to those attractions, and you got to have people to fill up 6,300 square feet. So I saw people talking about this location on the Beer Advocate Forum, and a surprising number of those people had no idea that New Belgium even had a San Francisco tap room. And that includes people that were local to the tap room and frequent visitors to San Francisco who are big beer nerds.
Wow. So, okay.
The others that commented on it were saying things like they'd visit it, and it had no special attraction for serious beer geeks. Apparently, the beer on tap and the beer to go was basically what you could get at any package store or most grocery stores. And they had like celebrity chefs there initially when they opened, but then those chefs left at like after like a year, and then all the food quality came down as a result of it. So like they dumbed it down. So it sounds like, and that's from the people who, you know, went there over a period of time. So it sounds like everything about it was kind of not great. I think the your chef leaving after like a year or whatever it was is a bad sign that this place is kind of doomed, you know,
yeah.
At least from a restaurant standpoint, maybe. So,
and a place that big, you have to count on that. You're not going to do that on just beer, you know, that size. That, you know, we've got a couple in Atlanta, New Realm Brewing, Mitch Steele, you know, is behind that one. It's a big, but it has a prime location. The food there is good. So, you know, they can prop up with more than just their beer there.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it's gotta be tough. And Brian, it just really sounds like, I know New Belgium knows what they're doing, but it sounds like they did everything wrong there to try and attract people to get in there. So
I think they didn't expect it. I think in the articles I read a couple of them, and they were talking about like, was that like introvert culture, or just like the fact that people just didn't come back out like they had before. And I don't think they opened in 2021 thinking that we're going to recover. Everything's going to be great. And it didn't, it really didn't. And I don't think anybody predicted that we'd all kind of become a little bit on the shut inside, and we kind of have, you know, I have a little bit. So,
oh, it changed us at the core. It changed society at its core, man. And that's, I think in our lifetimes, we've lived through at least two events that are core society changing events, you know, that literally changed the world. And boy, I hope that's all of the ones we have to live through. I don't want another one, though. But that we've heard that here, too. We just saw news that people are using delivery services, or they're not going out as much. They're not going out. They're using delivery services, just many things. That means they're not going out and supporting these places as much as they used to. So I realize I'm going to make a concerted effort to change this. I've heard it when I'm editing past shows, and I've noticed myself doing it today, but I will say something and then say so at the end of it. So I'm going to try not to go. Okay. So
anymore. Noted, Tim.
Yeah.
So do that.
See, I just did. It's reactionary there. I'm going to have to work on it. There, I did it that time. Okay. Well, moving along, Brian, we always love to hear about histories of beer, and especially ancient. We had a few years ago, we did a beer on ancient beer archaeology there with the beer archaeologist, and had a good time, talked about the history, the oldest beer, or what's supposed to be the oldest beer. But another discovery, Brian, recently. So what's up? What's the new news in old beer?
The new news in old beer is archaeologists have discovered 2,500-year-old beer in Ecuador. So the beer was found inside of, quote, huge jugs inside the ruins of an ancient civilization deep in Ecuador's rainforest. So the inhabitants of the civilization were farmers, and it's said to be the largest and oldest network of pre-Hispanic cities ever found in the Amazon, and highly organized with wide straight roads connecting various sized settlements. I think there were like five really large towns and like 10 smaller ones. It's crazy. If you look at the LiDAR pictures like I did, it looks like, you know, LiDAR of a modern city. They compared a little bit with New York when they were talking about it.
Interesting.
So the traces of the civilization were discovered 30 years ago, but they had no idea about the vastness of the civilization until the advent of LiDAR technology. They had no concept of it. Well, now you have LiDAR, you can light up all of the forest basically and see everything that's under it. The beer, of course, that they found was the traditional maize beer, chicha. There's no mention made of any kind of brewery found in the civilization. So I guess maybe people were making it at home. But now, despite what you may have learned about chicha from the Dogfish Head videos from a few years ago, maybe more than that now, you don't have to chew on the maize to make it. So I'm thinking, just based upon the fact that these were very large fermentation jugs, that they may have been using a germination process, which is more common for making chicha. So these guys may have been full on like brewers, except just with corn. So it's really interesting to think about that. 2,500 years ago, people were brewing like grand scale beer in the Amazon rainforest, basically. And it wasn't a rainforest, it was a city. So
now, did they say these huge jugs that they found, was it liquid beer in there, or are they talking like residue? Because I know they found a lot like, oh, there's residue that shows that they were brewing here.
I think given the time, it's residue.
That's kind of what I figured. But they said huge jugs and they found beer. I thought maybe they were sealed up. Maybe a lot had evaporated, but it was still liquid. You know, sometimes you can hit those weird climates where it preserves things.
Yeah, they did mention that the type of jugs, I guess they actually made the jugs out of maize somehow too. So these jugs don't necessarily hold up well over time. So it's amazing that any of them survived. A lot of them, at least in the cultures that still make it, they only have a couple of rounds through before they degrade to a point where you can't use them anymore. So yeah, it's pretty intriguing stuff.
Okay. And I was thinking a lot, I know clay is a popular thing in ancient civilizations, and I definitely think that's probably porous enough that it would have been gone long before 2,500 years there.
Yeah,
but maybe they had some alien technology with glass or a canning line or something.
That's like what I was going to say. Like, was there some sort of alien beer? Do we get to try alien beer? I'd be down for that. What's
growlers with logos on them there and stuff in the ancient?
Very possible. Yeah, I guess there's a way of with some of those using heat to keep them structurally sound for longer. I did a little deep dive into chicha because I'm like, wait, were they filling up giant jugs with corn they chewed up? That doesn't make sense. And I guess the way that they do that is they chew up the corn and they make it into they spit it out into little patties and let it dry, and that's how it's I think the bacteria ferments on it that way. But if you have the large jars, you're probably you're using germinated maize and then, you know, cooking it, boiling it, that sort of thing, heating it up and doing a more traditional fermentation. though I guess 2,500 years ago, it's not really traditional anything. So
I guess that would be as traditional as you. Yeah. Revolutionary, traditional, OGs, however you want to look at it there. But always interesting to see that. And, you know, the answer we got when we asked Travis Rupp a few years ago what the oldest beer was, he essentially said that's always changing because they're always discovering things. And, you know, this is older and that's older and that. So what's the oldest beer? Smalls, what's the oldest beer you've ever drank? Anywhere near 2,500 years old?
Oh, no, nowhere near that. I did try to open up something the other day because I was like, oh, I remember this from one of my travels. I was like, oh, this is from an old travel. And of course, the thing was infected and exploded all over the place. And I got to clean my kitchen. But still, it was probably a good 6 or 7 years old. And I was like, man, okay, this is way in the back of the fridge.
So I had a Sam Adams triple bock that I think was probably pushing 20 years old at the time. And when Georgia passed the law, SB, I don't remember if it was 63 or 85, but we drank a winter ale from Dogwood that would have been early 2000s, I guess, maybe somewhere. Now, not as old or older than the beers I've had. We had a 99, Brian. We had a 1999 Dry Fonten and Oud Goose.
That was stellar.
On my 40th birthday, I smoked a cigar that was manufactured the year I was born. So it was a clear Havana. It wouldn't have been a clear Havana because I think that was post embargo. But it was what do they call them? Puros? Havana Puros, Brian, there? So
all Cuban tobacco. So Havana,
that's right. All of them are Puros there. But yeah, so that was the oldest there. And then beer wise, it would probably be that Sam Adams triple bock was probably the oldest one.
I did have the remnants and I was able to keep the bottle that was like a small pour. I think I was given a taster of the last of a bottle of a port from, I want to say, 1929.
Okay.
And it was this is great. And it wasn't surprisingly not as expensive as you would think. And they let me keep the bottle. And I don't recall spending a lot of money on it, but I believe I did get a taste of it. And I do still have the bottle because, well, that bottle is older than myself or my parents or possibly, well, I was going to say, maybe not my grandparents, but anybody that's a relative of mine, it's older than them. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, good, I think the oldest thing I had was the triple bock. I think I had like a 94 triple bock back in, again, it would be about 20 years. So like not early 90s, I had a 94. And I think I've had it twice, and both times it was in the neighborhood of 20 years. And of course, that Drew Fonten and Oud Goose from 99, and that was about
in 2019. Well. So that was 20 years old. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. So that was the triple bock, not as good, but the Oud Goose was fantastic, and I'd recommend that to anybody who can get into it. Matt.
Yeah, the triple bock I had was also not good at all. When you touch the cork, it just fell down in the bottle, and it basically tastes like an ashtray full of dirt and molasses and gasoline or something. Not pleasant. Not unless that's what they were going for, you know.
I mean, it could be. You know, tastes change. At one point, we wanted face melting bitterness in our IPA. So it's possible they wanted brake pads and tires and dirt and molasses. So
maybe that could have been the palate at the time. Crazy stuff.
Very likely.
Well, y'all, thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. Remember, next week we will be at Truck and Tap on Saturday, the 17th of February for our Hot Drinks Cold Weather show. Cold weather or not, we're going to be there. 2 p.m. is the start time. We'll go, I guess, till we run out of hot drinks. So come hang out with us. We would definitely appreciate it. Y'all, if you enjoy what we're doing here, we would love your support on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/beerguys. And we've got some cool perks there for our Patreon supporters. Plus, you can join us on Discord for the chat and for the after party stream here Wednesday evenings. But with that said, we hope that you have a great week, and don't forget to drink local. Cheers.